Job chapter 1. Most time when somebody stands up to preach, just about any book that they turn to, you say, oh boy. But there's two books in the Bible that they ever say turn to, you say, oh no. And that's always Job or Jeremiah. Oh no. Job chapter 1. I'm going to read portions of chapter 1 in the book of Job. Then I'm going to turn over to the last chapter and read some in the last chapter of the book of Job. But beginning in Job chapter 1 and verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect. Now we know he was perfect because the Holy Ghost said he was, didn't he? Wonder why you have to make a perfect man go through what Job went through if he's perfect. I'm going to answer that question. That man was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there was born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and to drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. That wasn't the first time, that wasn't the last time. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. The Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? There's none like him in the earth, perfect. Now the Lord says perfect. Perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Now look with me in Job 42. Job chapter 42. Job seemed to be pretty well blessed in chapter 1. He seemed to be. Great household, children, wife, plenty. But here's what Job chapter 42, beginning in verse 12, says. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. For he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, and 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she-asses. He had also 7 sons and 3 daughters. And he called the name of the first Jemima. That's where we get our pancakes. And the name of the second was Keziah. And the name of the third was Karen Hapuk. And in all the land were no women found so fair as the daughters of Job. And the father gave them inheritance among their brethren. After this lived Job. That's after all that he's been through from chapter 1 until right now. Job lived. After this lived Job like he had never lived before. And saw his sons and his sons' sons even four generations. So Job died being old and full of days. You can read the living in Job's life in that verse, number 16. After this, Job lived. You see the happiness in his face as he looks at his family now. You think Job loved God more in chapter 42 than he did in chapter 1? I'd say he did. Job looks at his family now and he has more happiness than he's ever had in all of his life. You can hear the happiness in his voice now because in chapter 42, his children have names. In chapter 1, they don't have no name. You can feel his love for God, who had now blessed him more than he'd ever been blessed in all of his life. You can behold the kindness and the mercy in the way that he talks to God and even man now. For he's praying for his friends in this chapter, and he's not calling them miserable comforters. When Job looks at his health, when Job looks at his home, when Job stood out on his porch and looked across them fields and saw all the herds of sheep and camels and oxen and asses, when Job turns and looks at his own honey, when Job stands and looks towards heaven, when Job not only looks at all that he has, but when Job starts listening, he listens to seven sons that are playing. Listening to seven sons laugh. The noise of boys. There's not another sound in all of life like the noise of boys. He's got seven of them. He's got three daughters. And when he listens to these three daughters sing and play the violin and dance about the house and giggle, and he looks behind him and there's his wife humming in the kitchen, playing her harp in the parlor, listening to the sounds of her music, you can hear the sounds of life in Job now that you've never heard at one time in all of his life. I don't know if Job ever shouted, but I'm sure by the time he gets down to verse 15 and looks at all that he has, I bet Job would walk through that house and every now and then he wouldn't need to be primed by no musical instrument. He wouldn't need a sermon. I bet he'd just stand in the middle of that house and go, wow! I bet you could hear a sound from him that you never heard before. I bet he's shouting in chapter 42. And even with all that he had in chapter 1, I'm not so sure that he shouted. I bet there was a smile on his face from ear to ear. After this, Job lived. I bet he would walk through that house and every now and then them kids would look at him and that wife would look at him and them people would come by and I bet they'd see his hand raised in the air and I bet they could hear Job just praising God. I bet his soul was lit with a fire that warmed everybody that ever got near him. And I bet old Job would walk out on the front of that porch and I can just hear old Job start singing. He's got the whole world. In his hands, he's got the whole wide world. In his hands, Job knew in chapter 42 that God did have the whole world in his hands. I bet he'd start singing. He said, he's got you and me, brother. In his hands, he's got you and me, brother. Job looks back down now 42 chapters, and Job recognizes now that regardless of whether he was in the good times or the bad times, when he couldn't see God and even doubted, Job realized that God had him in his hands. He's got me and you, sister. In his hands, he's got me and you, sister. In his hands, I bet Job kept on singing. He said, he's got mine and your children. In his hands, he's got mine and your children. In his hands, that's a good comfort to know. He's got mine and your troubles. In his hands, he's got mine and your troubles. Because Job looks back down now through 39 chapters of trouble. Now Job can stand and look back and say, you know something? He did have all my troubles in his hands. But he didn't stop singing there. He kept singing. Now he's singing, he's got mine and your blessings. In his hands, he's got mine and your blessings. You see, that Bible said the Lord blessed Job in the latter end more than the beginning. For you see, Job could say, thou hast kept the good wine until now. But you see, it wasn't too many chapters ago. It wasn't too many days before that Job was saying, I loathe it. I would not live always. Job was saying at one time in his life, and it wasn't that long ago, I'd rather be dead than alive. Let me alone, he said, for my days are vanity. He said, life is not worth living. That's where Job was, what, too many chapters ago. Let the day perish wherein I was born. Just leave me alone and let me die. That's where Job was not too long ago. But good wine would kind of stop talk like that. I want you to look. All the old Bible theologians, and I'd like to think I was one, but if you don't, that's all right. I just like to think I'm one. But they all say that every book has a key verse and every chapter has a key verse. That's what they say. So if you let me pick the key verse of the Bible and the key verse of the chapter, in chapter 42 and verse number 5, this is what I think. But he says, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. I had heard about God. But now, my eye seeth thee. Something happens between chapter 1 and chapter 42 that causes Job to say, I'd heard about him, but now I see him. You see, when you hear something, it's always what somebody else says. When you hear something, it's always what somebody else believes. But when you see something, you see it for yourself. And Job is saying, I have heard of it all. But boy, he said, now I see it. Something happened between being perfect and upright and fearing God and eschewing evil. Something happened between that and now when he said, I heard, but now my eye sees. Which is my sermon, but there's only two things that happened between chapter 1 and chapter 42. There's only two things that you'll find in Job's life between 1 and 2, and that's his testimony and his trial. Job had a testimony that everybody should envy. You could say that Job's testimony was the role model of convictions. Who wouldn't want the convictions of Job? Job was perfect. And he even says so himself. For the Bible said he sinned not with his lips. He looked not upon a maid. I am clean without transgression. Job's testimony out of his own heart. Job's testimony out of his own mouth. I'm clean. I don't have any transgressions. That's what Job said. He said, I'm innocent. Job said, neither is there iniquity within me. And Job was one of these kind of guys that he was not only perfect in the way that you saw him and he presented himself, but Job had a way of his home was perfect and his business was perfect. And he walked right and he talked right and he dressed right and he lived right. And everybody around him was the same way. Why, if you looked at Job's family, they all looked like they were supposed to. They all looked perfect. And anybody that knew Job said, man, this guy has got it together. He was upright. His speech was blameless. You couldn't find nothing wrong with his speech. He's upright. His thoughts are pure. He's upright. His attitude is decent. He's upright. His morals are clean. Job feared God. He feared God with his character. You could look at Job's character and know that he feared God because he never wanted to displease God. He never missed church. He never missed prayer meeting. He dishonored not God. He esteemed his word more than his necessary food. He denied not God, for Job's own testimony was, I know he lives. He feared God in his character, but he feared God for his children. For the Bible said that he sanctified them continually, which means he was always lecturing them. Now, I looked up in a Hebrew, in a Jewish commentary, to find out exactly what Job was doing. And they say that Job was constantly lecturing them, that he was sanctifying them continually, that he would get them up in the mornings, and he would summons them to holy duty. He had them wash their hands before the altar to clean themselves of all their innocence. They had to repent of everything in the course of the day. Even if they had too much mirth and laughter, they had to repent over it. He got them up early, each one separately, not all of them together, but one of them, each of them one by one. And if that wasn't enough, Job would lay before God every morning and beg God and plead to God that his children would do no wrong. He burnt sacrifices and offerings, not for himself, not for his devotion for God, but he burned them for those children that they might not sin nor curse God. And he feared God for those children. Thus did Job continually. He eschewed evil. His attitude is expressed in that word, eschewed. That is a nauseous word. Eschew. That was Job's attitude towards sin. Eschewed. You should have heard Job talk about sin. Why, he could make it so ugly you never wanted to do it. You should have heard Job talk about the world. Oh, this was one bad world. You should have heard Job talk about the sinners. You should have heard his hatred and disgust for sin. But if you look at that testimony, something's missing. There's something missing in that testimony. If you look at it, to me, life is missing. Living is missing. After this, Job lived. His perfection was greater than the presence of God. But you wait till God's finished with him. His fear of God was greater than his fullness of God. His concern for his children was greater than his concern for God. For all the sacrificing that he's doing in chapter 1, it's not for him, it's for his children. You know what else is missing? Grace. His hatred for sin is greater than his love for God. You ever met people like that? First thing I'm going to tell you about is how horrible the world is. It won't tell you how great God is. Job had a greater hatred for sin than he had a love for God. His speech was greater at denouncing sin than exalting a love for God. For he found it easier to speak of evil than the grace that taught him to deny it. You know what else is missing? Mercy. There's mercy missing in Job's testimony. His concern for his children is for their sinning and cursing God, not that they would love God. So Job's perfection had never seen the goodness of God. We have his own testimony. Oh, he had heard about the goodness of God, but he had never seen it. Something happened that caused Job to see something that he had only heard about. Job's uprightness, Job had never seen the kindness of God. Oh, he had heard about it, he had just never seen it. And that fear of God, Job had never really seen a love for God. Oh, he had heard about it, he had just never seen it. But something's going to happen to Job to cause him to see it. For Job to bless him in the latter days more than the beginning. Job's eschewing evil and hatred for sin. Job had never seen the mercy of God. Oh, he had heard about it, but he had just never seen it. My second point is the trial that Job has to go through. The trial that Job went through, it opened his eyes. You know what it says in chapter 23? I believe it's verse 10. It says, God hath softened my heart. I wonder why God would have to soften his heart. I guess it had to have been hard. For 23 chapters into Job's trials, he's saying, God has softened my heart. You see, Job's testimony needed some gentleness. The Spirit of God is now bearing that fruit of gentleness now in Job's life. Job's heart is now becoming soft. It yields to pressure. And you can always tell when somebody has been holding something long enough and firm enough, they leave their fingerprints in it. And God had got Job in his hands, and by the time God gets through with it, you can see the fingerprints of God in Job's life. Something soft is malleable and easy to work with. Something soft is not hard and it's not rough. You know what David said of the sons of Zeruiah? Abner was not a great friend to David and Israel. But David was kind to Abner, even though he was an enemy. And them sons of Uzziah, Joab and them, they killed him. And you know what David says about them? He said, oh, they're just too hard for me. You know what Jesus said on the cross? If you read Psalm chapter 22, when Jesus is on that cross, he said, my heart, like wax, it melts. No wonder he can be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. When God is through with Job, a soft answer can turn away wrath. When God is through with Job, a soft tongue can now break bones. For you see, that trial was for Job's heart. But not only for his heart. That trial was for his honey. A lot of times when we preach, we're always kind of hard on Miss Job. She should have stood with him. She shouldn't have cursed God. She should have been there with him through everything, thick and thin. But let me just stop for just a minute and ask you to just walk 1 mile in her shoes. Just 1 mile in Miss Job's shoes. Lose a child. She lost all her children. So lose a child and then stand right beside her and listen to her weep. Lose something that you love more than anything and then stand there and watch Miss Job weep. Bury that child and watch her heartache and watch her as she goes out to that graveyard, sits beside that tomb, and go out there with her and sit there and listen to her talk to those children. Stand there and watch your husband lose everything that he's got. Lose all of his house, lose his job, lose his security. Everything's gone. Money evaporates. Now you can't buy anything. The husband's health is gone. He can't work. And he lays there all day long and he just moans and groans. And then watch a fire come through and burn up everything you got. And then the storm comes and it ruins everything. And then thieves come in and break and steal all your treasures. And if you've never looked towards heaven and says, why God, then you've never really had a trial. You've had trouble, but you've never had a trial. Because home is a Hades when the wife's not happy. Job's integrity. He kept looking at Miss Job when all this is going on, and he's saying, be strong. That was his integrity. Be strong, Miss Job. Stand. So when Job goes out to chapter 2 to worship, he goes out there and worships all by himself. She doesn't go with him. You don't think she didn't need to worship God? You don't think Miss Job didn't need to be out yonder with her husband trying to get a hold of God? He's out there all by himself. And then consider Miss Job. She has to live with a perfect man. Now that would be difficult for any lady. The trial was not only to soften his heart, but the trial was for his own sins. You see, the heart of a perfect man, that's what Job had. He had a perfect heart. It said he was perfect, upright, feared God, eschewed evil. And yet God discovered sin in Job's heart. And Job finally discovers sin in his own heart. Job at one point looks towards his friends and God and he says, thou inquirest after mine iniquity and searchest after my sin? Job could not see no sin in his own life. None whatsoever. And it took 30 chapters of heat and hard trials for Job to say, I am vile. Job saw sin in everyone but himself. He saw sin in his children. He saw sin in his wife. He saw sins in his friends, but he never saw sin in himself. Hard for a perfect man to see sin in himself, isn't it? Jesus would come along one day and he would say, hey, you that's without sin, you cast the stones. You know what sin he's talking about? Adultery. Stone it, he said. Hit it hard. Put death to it. The law permits it. The law permits you to stone it. The commandments condemn it. And Jesus never told them that they couldn't do it. He just said this, before you do, he said, look at your own heart. Look at your own life and look at your own sins. And he said, if you will, you won't be so hard. Because the sin of adultery is pretty hard in itself. It's got its own price tag. The trial was for Job's heart to soften it up and to find the sins in it. The trial was for the storms that Job was going to go through. Job's testimony, he was perfect, he was upright, he feared God, eschewed evil. And Job thought that his perfection was a hedge. And as long as Job was perfect, he had a hedge about him that he thought nothing could ever get to him and take what he had away. That hedge was his perfection. I'm innocent. I've done nothing wrong. I've been blessed for my goodness. I've been blessed for my protection, for my perfection. I've been blessed because I fear God. I've been blessed because I eschew evil. I have been blessed, and my blessings are my protection, and nothing can harm me. So Job complains not too many days down the road. He said, a storm hurls me out of my place. He said, a storm come and took everything I had. Job had a hard time reconciling that. He said, I was at ease, but he hath broken me asunder. He hath taken me by the neck. He hath shaken me to pieces. And when I looked at that verse, and when Job's talking about God had come and got him by the neck and just shook him, I said, you know what he did? You know what he shook out of him? He shook out his righteousness. He shook out his testimony. And he shook out his attitude. Job said, my hope hath he removed like a tree. Job never thought his hope and faith would ever fail him. What is my strength that I should hope? Job never dreamed that his perfection would ever fail him. As long as he done everything right and everything perfect, he could never see anything bringing any heartache to him. Never. But boy, life can change fast. Hope can disappear quick. That faith can fall so fast and you don't even recognize when and how it goes. And when a storm comes into our life, it always changes things. When that storm comes into your life, that tree falls on them cars, that car's ruined. When that tree comes through that home, it's tore up. The flood waters come in, they rise up 4 foot in the house, they destroy everything. The wind blows everything that's not tied down. Hurricanes will come and blow down the buildings. Tornadoes blow all the rubbish away and trash into the air. And when everything blows away, then you have to rebuild. You got to rebuild. Got the same foundation, but you got to rebuild it all. And the storm comes into Job's life, and it blows away his perfection. I want you to look at something that's amazing. But I want you to look in Job chapter 9 with me just for a moment. He's perfect in chapter 1. And he's got everything else perfect. His home, his children, his wife, his animals, everything. But in Job chapter 9 and in verse 20, if I justify myself, my own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I'm perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore, that I said it. He destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. So when that storm comes into Job's life and Job has to start rebuilding, he rebuilds that perfection, but now it's got some love in it. When he rebuilds that uprightness, now it's got some grace in it. When he rebuilds that fear of God, now it's got some kindness in it. When he rebuilds that hatred for sin, now there's some mercy in it. And the trial was for the Spirit of God in Job's life. Deep into Job's trial, here's the verse. There's a spirit in man. The inspiration of the Almighty giveth understanding. Great men are not always wise. Job's strict perfection is fixing to learn something. Job's disciplined uprightness is fixing to learn something. Job's holy fear of God is fixing to learn something. Job's harsh hatred for sin is fixing to learn something. See, what's he fixing to learn? If there's a spirit. It's more than being perfect. It's more than being upright. It's more than fearing God. It's more than hating sin. Job said, I heard all that, but he said, now I see. You can hear all kinds of things, but ask the Apostle Paul and he'll tell you only God can take the scales off your eyes. Job's seeing changes everything in his life. Changed everything. And you can see it in his family. You know what Jemima means? If you look a word up in any Bible dictionary, it means gentleness. There's some gentleness in chapter 42 that wasn't in the no-name children in chapter 1. Keziah, you know what that word means? It's fragrance. There's a fragrance in Job's life in chapter 42 that wasn't in chapter 1. And then that Korinhapuk, that word means beauty. There's now a countenance in Job's face that nobody had ever seen that wasn't in chapter 1. And the Lord blessed Job in the latter end more than the beginning. And it's amazing to me how the whole Bible is aligned up. Because 6 verses after it said the Lord blessed Job, 6 verses later is Psalm 1:1, where it starts off where blessed is the man. And blessed is the man and his tree is planted by the waters and he bringeth forth fruit. And Job, there was no fair life or women or children in all the land. For everything around Job is now blessed, and now everybody enjoys the blessings. And so my simple illustration as a piano player does come. Job loved God more in chapter 42 than he did in chapter 1. You know what Job would say in chapter 42? He just stood there and shook his head. He said, I've uttered things that I don't understand. That's what Job said. He said things way too wonderful for me, which I knew not. So you know what my invitation is tonight? Lord, I don't always understand what you're doing, but I sure do want to love you. And I wish you'd open my eyes to where I could see you. Would you bow your heads with me? And with that statement, you have to let God do what He wants to do. I've heard, but now I see. And that's when no pastor, no wife, no dad, no children, no friend can help. That's when you put yourself in the hands of God. Because only God can open up your eyes. I've heard all my life, Lord, but I want to see. And then when you get through all that, you can sing the song, He's got me and you, all our troubles, blessings and everything in His hands. I've heard, Lord, I just want to see. I put my life into your hands, Lord. You know what I need and when I need it. And I wait for you.
The Lord is speaking and He says, I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness doth not appear. And anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see. The difficulty comes in not being willing to admit what you don't know. Being willing to admit what you don't know. It's like trying to argue with a blind man about what he sees. There's not much you can do. But if you had the heart to admit what you don't know, maybe you wouldn't have to go through 42 chapters. Just go to Him. Eye salve means the eye must be sick. The eye does not produce light, but it receives light. But if the eye is distorted, it makes everything you see distorted. Same light. Or would you just be willing to admit what you don't know? Father, thank you for thy word. Thank you for the message. In Jesus' name.